Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Star Chamber Show live podcast. This is episode number 230, and this is one of your three co-hosts tonight, Stephen Zimmer, broadcasting from Lexington, Kentucky. Joining me tonight, also from Kentucky, is R.G. Westerman, and from Tennessee, Daniel Dark. So welcome, my friends. Welcome, welcome. Big
hello,
night ahead.
Hello, hello.
There hello. She is. The dark one in his trolley tonight, as always.
I'm not here tonight.
No way. Oh, you the one night that I mention it in the beginning and you're not there. How about that?
I'm in the trolley, but I'm not actually online.
Okay. Technicality. Oh man.
I'm not literally. I'm not here.
You're not here.
The dark one is a mystery wrapped in an enigma.
Yes.
Wrapped up in a fruitcake.
Well, I feel like rum. About like that after the long day I've had so far. So it's good to finally be able to relax and talk to you two. And we're going to have a great guest tonight. So I'm actually been looking forward to this quite a bit. So, yeah, this
is
awesome.
What I loved about today was I got up real early this morning for me. And everything is like 7 o'clock or something like that. And looked at the weather. You know, I was planning on getting up on top of the trolley and sealing the whole top of the trolley. Looked at the weather and it said, "Oh, it's 80% chance of rain today."
Oh no!
I didn't seal the top of the trolley today. Guess what? It didn't all day long. It
rain?
Never rained. Didn't rain a friggin' drop.
That's always the way, though. That's always the way. if you had started the task, it would have come down like a deluge. You know that, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And that's what I said. I told a buddy of mine that came down and cut my grass and everything. You know, if I had gotten up there, about the time I would have really gotten started, it would have poured down. And I would have had that stuff all over it would have run off all over the sides of the trolley and everything. I would have had a huge mess. But no.
Yep.
Oh, man.
Love weather in the South.
Yep. That happened. That happened just last week. My husband went outside to mow the lawn, and it had been like, you know, nice and sunny all day. The moment he stepped off the porch into the yard, it just, like it was someone flipped a switch. It just came down, and I was looking out the window at him. He looked up at the sky, and he goes, "Seriously?" It was like the funniest thing. But, yep, that's always the way.
Yeah, yesterday was supposed to be nice. I was going to do it yesterday because it was supposed to be nice. Rained all friggin' day.
Mm-hmm.
All day.
Of course.
Today it was showing no rain at first, and then it said, okay, it's going to have 80% chance of rain, which is 80% of the area that you live in is going to have rain in it.
Mm-hmm.
Not a drop here. Been sunny most of the day. But... what can you expect, you know, from a weather person that gets the weather right, you know, like 10% of the time and, you know,
right,
makes just pennies, you know, doing it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well,
no, I understand.
It's the South. I mean, both Tennessee and Kentucky are, it's just a crapshoot, you know, just roll the dice and see what happens.
Oh, man. Yeah. No kidding. I mean, it's, yeah, I can start out the day with a thunderstorm, and then by the time, you know, 11 o'clock is rolling around in the morning, it's like suddenly it's sunny and blue skies, and then it, you know, back to, mm-hmm. you know, rain by the afternoon, and then back to sun by the evening. And yeah, it's just, it is a really
yep.
schizophrenic kind of weather here. Maybe the best way to say it. I don't know, but it's something else. I mean, it is.
Well,
I'm definitely.
The weather, just wait 5 minutes.
No, yeah,
one time
no kidding.
I was like 5 minutes from the weather station, and they were reporting
mm-hmm.
on the radio about how beautiful, sunshiny, and all that was today. And
wow.
I'm literally like 5 minutes from their station, and it is pouring down rain, just like right on the verge of tornado type of rain.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
You're like, do you have a window? You know, look outside.
Yes.
I know you're in a soundproof set
well,
of room and stuff, but go outside and look
so,
real quick.
It might not have been raining where they were. I mean, I've actually seen like the wall where the rain ends. And, like, the front of our house is completely dry, and the backyard, it's, like, pouring down rain. Like, that's definitely a thing.
Well, at one time when I was a teenager and everything, I was riding up a divided little road in Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
And the other side of the road, it was pouring down rain, and I'm driving
mm-hmm.
in sunshine.
Yep.
Yeah.
Y'all should have been better. Y'all didn't go to church last week.
Well, we probably should turn a little bit toward the topic of the evening, but I do want to mention also that real quickly that Peter Welmerink, who we've had, of course, in the show and mentioned his Kickstarter campaign for Big Jack, I want to give one update on that. 6 days to go on Kickstarter. Folks, it's you're doing great. 65 backers. $2,451 pledged out of 3,000. So 6 days to go, and he is down to $549 to hit the goal. So it's getting close.
Nice.
And so we're going to put out a bunch of links on that tonight, tomorrow, and hopefully you know, maybe we'll get a few folks to dive in and get them even closer. But looking good. And
awesome.
And if you've been keeping track of Imaginarium news, we have had some really cool people announced recently since last week's show. And that includes the great Brian K. Morris was announced as spotlighted guest. He's a super guy, YouTuber, deluxe, award-winning author, publisher, just playwright, award-winning playwright. I mean, he's one of those insanely multi-talented people, and just thrilled to have him aboard. And we also announced D.L. Gardner, who's, like I said, was one of those people that couldn't make the physical event because she's from the Pacific Northwest, but can make this event. And which is cool because she's a columnist for Amazing Stories magazine. Yes, that Amazing Stories magazine. And she is a great artist whose work you can definitely check out on even on the covers of her books. And then last but not least, she's an award-winning screenwriter and author with a fantasy series currently being developed for film. So called the Ian's Realm Saga. So, yeah, we've got some super additions, and basically we're, you know, new ones are being announced all the time. We even sent a little reminder post on Howard Scott Warshaw, the video game pioneer, who's going to be joining us, the guy that was one of the original Atari game designers. You know, he's actually been on our show too. So, but he's, yeah, we've had a lot of good updates. So that's some fun stuff for you. And I know that, yes, Andy was asking about that in the chat room, because you'd noticed we've been making several new announcements. So so hopefully that answers your question there, Sandy. And hello to Clay Barnett. See you in the chat room. And I guess we're getting just underway there. So, yeah, so anything else you guys want to know about, just post us a note in there. And, yeah, congrats to Pete, though. He is closing in, and I hope he can get over the hump to produce that comic book project. That sounded so cool when he was on the show a few weeks ago. But we will see. And of course, as Daniel would remind me, yes, we never forget our sponsors. And tonight we have two, and I'll go ahead and get those done so we can make sure we are ready when our guest calls in tonight. And that would be we have Mary Ann Pohl and Sandy Lander. So we have two great authors as our sponsors tonight. And so, yeah, that's cool. We had a cool new sound effect there. Yeah, so that'll be our new sponsor sound effect. That'll be now sponsors.
Soundboard.
That's awesome. Soundboard. But Mary Ann Pohl, I'll tell you a little bit about her first, and then I will run a brand new spot from Sandy Lender that's from now through September here. So here is Mary Ann Pohl. An invisible battle is being fought around us. If we listen closely, we can hear swords clashing in the war for human souls. The Iconoclast thriller series is not your typical horror. So, if you're looking for blood and guts just for the sake of blood and guts, you won't enjoy these books. But if you're looking for frightful stories in which ordinary individuals must face extraordinary circumstances and the supernatural, look no further. And then you can find Mary Ann Pohl definitely online. I'll give you a URL to check her out at, and that would be on Amazon at www.author.maryannpohl.com. And that is, let me spell Mary Ann Pohl real quick, MaryAnnPoll, www.author.maryannpohl.com. And that's, that'll take you to her Amazon page. Great writer. So I can vouch for that, and definitely can vouch for this next author, Sandy Lender, who I have definitely explored her work before doing some editing work with her. And so I know her work well. I can absolutely say, yeah, fantastic writer. And we definitely appreciate your sponsorship of the Star Chamber Show. And so without further ado, here is a brand new spot from Sandy, and that should be this one.
Friedrich Nietzsche told us, "We have art so that we shall not die of reality." Save yourself with stories from award-winning author Sandy Lender. He has everything you need to stave off reality mortality. From paranormal romance to young adult sci-fi to epic sword and sorcery and more. You can access it all at the Amazon author page for Sandy Lender. When you follow Sandy's page, you'll be notified when there's a new story to whisk you away from the dangers of reality.
All right, Sandy, that's a nice spot there. There we go.
We need to be whisked away from the dangers of reality. Yes.
Yes. We do need to be whisked away from the dangers of reality. I am with you 100%. So if you all want to whisk away, I am aboard for the plan. I know Rebecca will definitely appreciate this, but I've been watching for the elves marching to the west, to sail off to the west, and if I do find them, I will let you all know. I've been watching.
Me too.
But yeah, hey, the fight goes on, and I've been we're talking a little bit about our crazy weather, but the writing goes on, and I hope that both of you are doing well on that front, because that's been one of the few things that's kept me sane during the past few months here. Mm-hmm. Is the creative outlet, and I'm happy. I wanted to give him credit live for this, but old Tommy B. Smith was giving me a nudge to do some new Hellscape stories, my horror stuff, which is actually I don't have that many horror titles in my catalog up. But this will be the third volume, and I have to say that I have started some new stories, and sometimes that little nudge from a friend or suggestion from a friend saying, "Hey, why don't you do another one of these books?" It makes a difference sometimes. Mm-hmm. You got
it
to
really,
talking
that's
to them, and
true.
Yeah. So I just want to report that because I've been writing a lot of stuff. I had finished a couple new novellas, and then I had the larger book I announced. So yeah, that's been a positive. So, but I know that you've got some stuff cooking right now, Rebecca. or around the corner,
a
maybe?
Yeah, a little bit. I've actually been able to get more. I've started school with the kids. Of course, you know, we're working at home
right.
with our schooling. And I've actually gotten more done since we started that because, like, I'll sit down at my computer and I'll be like, okay, you guys do your work. I'm doing my work and you do your work. And so it's like an incentive to, like, be a good example. And I'm like, what's happening right now? But, yeah,
nice.
I'm coming up on the last little legs. The last legs of Falling Embers, and I'm like, oh my God, can I please get this book
cool.
done? So
nice, the home stretch. I know that feeling, and it's good, but it also is like, yeah, I gotta get there. You know, I know the pull.
Yeah.
It even gets stronger.
Yeah,
and
that
you get
final
that,
stretch.
That, yeah, that's awesome. And
yeah.
It looks like we do have our guest on deck here. So I will go ahead and announce our tonight's guest. I'm very excited to have aboard an author and a corporate executive who's worked with all kinds of CEOs and corporate boards and has recently launched a new company, Care Manatee. And Care Manatee is a business focusing on providing family caregivers structured ways to obtain practical knowledge and access support. A great new project. And along with that, she's got a brand new book, How to Survive 911 Medical Emergencies Step by Step Before, During, and After, which gives information and insights to caregiving of elderly parents. And so I am so proud tonight to bring onto the show. We've been looking forward to this very, very much. Nancy May. Nancy, your microphone is on. Welcome to the Star Chamber Show podcast.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here with you all.
Great to speak with
you. How are you doing tonight, Nancy?
Hey, Daniel, how you doing?
I'm doing fine, hon. You having a good day?
I'm having a great day. I'm here with you guys.
Yes.
Fantastic. Well, it's great to have you, Nancy. And Daniel had talked to us a little bit about you when you came aboard, and Holly was talking to me as well. But yeah, definitely, we've got a few things to cover with you tonight for sure. I mean, definitely Care Manatee, definitely your new book. But probably the best thing to start with is just give us a little bit about yourself, and you know, and then maybe the new company. That's a good way to probably lead into the book.
Sure. Well, my background is corporate, most recently working in the boardroom with public and private companies, but predominantly public companies, some of the largest names you know in the world, down to some smaller companies, helping them with board governance work, and as well as finding the right directors to be there and helping them make some changes when maybe they've hit some bumpy roads. But over the course of time, I have also taken care of my mom and dad as a long-distance caregiver. And that's, mom and dad were 1,500 miles, or far 1,500 miles away. And I took all my corporate research and experience and dove into how to be a professional caregiver from a long distance when, in fact, things got a little bumpy for them. And hence the new business, Care Manatee, bringing the concept of care and humanity back together in one.
Very nice, very nice.
Wow.
And
we
just got a note from the chat room that actually says one of our authors listening in the chat room says this Clayton, I've been a hospital farm tech for 10 years, and he said he might be able to contribute to the conversation tonight. So yeah, they're definitely interested
fabulous.
In what you're the subject area you're talking about. And yeah, you've got a brand new book, as I understand it, from the Amazon page. This one just came out July 8th, correct? And tell us about it. That's always exciting to hear about a new release.
Sure. Well, the book was researched with great depth and detail with paramedics, EMT doctors, nurses, lawyers, you name it, as well as professional caregivers. Because when the first time that I had to call 911, actually, I didn't actually call 911. It was the aides that called 911, and I was on a video camera up here in Connecticut, and mom and dad are down in Florida. But it was scary. I mean, there's no other way to say that you are not in control of the life and death situation of somebody that you love. So I thought, well, God, you know, what can we do to make that process as easy as possible for those of us who are in charge of literally saying go or no go or live or die scenarios for those that we care about, and those are typically our parents. And more of us are doing that these days. So the book was born out of that, and we put together a very simple step-by-step process of everything you need to think about from before an emergency happens all the way through to the very end of discharge, how to be better prepared in the ER, a little bit more challenging with COVID today, but we can do that, how to make sure the paramedics have what they need so that they don't make mistakes. And believe me, they can make mistakes if they don't have the right information. And then finally, we did a chapter on what to do in case of times of disaster, tornadoes, hurricanes, floods, when the 911 system goes out. You can actually reach 911 when there is no 911 system out there.
Oh, wow. Wow. Yeah, and that's very timely, too, because, I mean, we've got a couple of hurricanes coming in right now as we speak. And
yeah,
certainly
please.
The
you know, not just yeah. one, but two hurricanes.
Yeah, two, two.
One.
And then
yeah,
the,
we
and
were
the COVID,
without power
I'm,
and internet for 10 days, so I got it. Yeah, I know.
But the relevance of your book couldn't be more relevant, because one of the biggest topics right now with COVID is the, you know, a lot of people are, you know, found out that, you know, the limitations on
yes.
visits in the hospital, you know, and in many cases, you know, where the person, you know, the elderly parent isn't even allowed guests in some circumstances. And,
mm-hmm.
and it's been a really ugly situation for a lot of families who, you know, have mothers, you know, or fathers in the hospital, grandparents. And, that's probably a topic that's come up quite a bit with your area as you get out and talk about this topic to folks.
Absolutely. In fact, we dealt with it with my own mom. So my mom had a touch of pneumonia during COVID, and my lead aide said Nance was going to take her to the ER department, but she wasn't going to leave her. So down in Florida, where my folks are, my mother was allowed to have one caregiver or somebody to be with her in the emergency department because she's got moderate dementia. So that was helpful.
Mm.
But if she was to be admitted, we were told that she could have nobody.
Mm.
So
wow.
I'm not a pleasant and easy person to deal with when we can't get what we need.
I understand.
You really have to learn to stand up for what is important for your parents' situation, and you'll know what's right and what's not right for them just based on life history and the care and situation that they're dealing with at the time. But when they told that she couldn't have anybody in the hospital if she were to be admitted, then I insisted that she not be admitted, and our doctor agreed and got on the case and made sure she was not admitted and came home, and we had full medical care in the house. So a PA came in. The good news, though, is that the x-ray alone in the house, which you can do, would not have detected the kind of early stage that she had, but an MRI was able to do that in the hospital. So we discovered it, and then we're able to treat her at home.
Oh, wow.
Very nice.
That's amazing.
Yeah. It is possible to do. You just need to make sure you've got the right medical team and doctor to help make sure that the sign-up and the registration for the in-home care is possible.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I know, Daniel, you probably have a few things to talk about, because I know both you and I for sure, and I'm sure Rebecca, yeah, all of us have had situations of caregiving for elderly folks in our families, I think.
Well, it's like my mom's 92 years old, but I think that she's probably going to outlive me.
Keep smoking those cigars, Daniel.
That's what's keeping me alive, is smoking cigars. over the last few years and everything, where I've almost died, you know, several times, my wife, you know, happened to be able to be in the hospital with me. At
right.
this point in time, right now, I don't know that she would be able to be in the ICU with me. You know, whether they would let her even come up there or not. So
ICU may not be the case. You know, it depends on hospital to hospital. It's really very difficult for a family member to advocate for somebody who's infirmed, you know, like you were in a situation. And when you're not totally, I'll say when you're not totally with it, I have no other way to say it, when you're not feeling well and you're sick, it's difficult to make the right decision. And even your family members who can't really see the situation that's going on. So there's a petition that's actually going on around the internet and around the country to have hospitals allow one caregiver, one family caregiver at any, you know, at any particular point in time to be with a patient in the hospital so that they're not left alone. And that, I think that's important. Not a visitor, but we're talking a caregiver, and that's important.
Someone that can stay,
And can advocate for them, absolutely.
Yeah, when I had my stroke and everything, I couldn't speak.
Right.
So, you know, that was part of my problem is I could mumble, but I couldn't speak. And, you know, that would have been, if she hadn't been there and be able to, you know, sort of translate what I was trying to get across to them, you know, what I wanted and stuff, you know, they would have probably done something different with me at the time. And, you know, like, I'm sort of a quandary to the doctors when I come in with my blood issue, because I'll be sitting up in bed and the doctor will be sitting there looking at my chart and sitting there looking at me like, why is this man not in a coma? Because, like, the last time I was in the hospital, my blood count was 5.3, where I was having so much internal bleeding.
Right.
And, you know, that's something that, you know, I was sitting up talking to him, and he's just like, you know, I can tell by the look on his face, like, he should be in a coma at least. You know, this is a point where people die right here. And, you know, but she was in the room with me, you know, in case something happened.
Yep.
That she could make those decisions in case something happened and tell them, you know, what my wishes would be and stuff like that.
I would much rather have a family member make those decisions for me than a doctor who doesn't know me, right?
Right. Right. You know, my wife knows how I feel about things. She feels about things differently than I do. And when it comes to her, the same thing happened to her. Her sister is the one that tells the doctors everything because she doesn't believe in taking blood into your body. So, yeah, I told her, I said, don't make me make that decision. If they tell me we can give you a blood transfusion and save your wife, or, you know, she's going to die, I do not want to make that decision. You know, if that's against her wishes, because I'll make the one that's for my wishes, not for hers at that point in time. But,
oh, wow.
It's very difficult. I get it, Daniel. Yeah. It's hard when you're faced with those types of life and death choices and you're the one who's healthy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's like when my dad died. Yeah, you know, when I walked in there, they still had him on the machines and everything, ventilator and, you know, electrocardiogram and all that stuff. They still had all that stuff hooked up to him, and he was still having a heartbeat per se. But the only thing it was his pacemaker was sitting there going off. And when you look, you know how, like, with a heartbeat, it has a arch to the, you know, to the heartbeat. And then it goes straight up and down and then arches back out. His was like a single, like a cross right there. There was no arch on either side. It was just like boom, boom, boom. And, you know, he was dead. I was like, pull him up. You know, my mom's in there with me and everything. I was like, just take him off everything. You know.
Yeah, it takes your breath away, doesn't it?
And we were there, we were coming there to pick him up to bring him home that morning when he died. His heart just finally gave out.
Oh, wow. Oh, man.
Yeah, my dad was the same way, but we were able to bring him home, and he was 8 days at home in hospice. It was his heart. His brain was strong, but he was 99 and 47 days, and I count 47 days because Dad wanted to get to 120, so every minute and every hour and every day counts, so we had them.
Yeah.
You got to smile even at the end a little bit, right?
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Holly's got an 88-year-old father who's absolutely determined to make it to 100. He said, it's okay if he passes a day after, but he said he has to make it to 100. That's his goals. And he's chugging. He really is. He's got challenges here and there, but he's still chugging pretty good. So,
mine's not as far, reaching. Mine is to make it till tomorrow. Every day.
That's a good one.
That's my goal, is to make it to tomorrow.
Yeah.
If I make it through this one, I can make it to tomorrow. If I can make it through this one, I can make it to tomorrow.
One foot in front of the other. My dad used to cheat and say that he was a year older than he was on each birthday.
I am younger than you, Daniel, a little bit, but I have to say, in 2020, I'm right there with you, day to day, pretty much. All kinds of surprises this year, health wise. So it's it affects all ages, I think. But I am very sensitive to what Nancy's talking about, because I had many years where my mom had sarcoidosis, and because of that particular disease she had, she had some really serious bouts in the hospital when it would flare, and you never knew what it was going to do. It was a real unpredictable type ailment, my sister and I would have to definitely jump immediately to be the caregivers for her, whenever it would strike. And we had some real tough times in the hospital, and I can't imagine even like going through it right now with all the stuff with COVID and them not letting people in and this and that, it's definitely a tough thing, and it gets so personal. And I'm totally in sync with what you're talking about, Nancy.
Well, thank you. And the book is really designed to help create a roadmap, and it's an easy roadmap to follow if you just follow the directions. Just like anything, if you know what to expect as much as possible, everybody's situation is slightly different, but the process of what goes on, if you're prepared, it will take some of that fear and anxiety out for you, because you'll know what to do. And that's the goal, versus just going in blindly. And nobody wants to go into an ER with not knowing what's next, right?
Right.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. How far you can push the doctors, how far you can't.
The last time I went in with my mom, I parked the car and they actually brought her in by ambulance, and I came up to the hospital because it was COVID. As soon as I walked through the first set of sliding glass doors there in emergency, there was a lady sitting there saying, "What's your purpose to be here?"
Mm-hmm.
I was like, "My mom." They brought my mom in the ambulance, and we're trying. I'm up here to be with her. She goes, "Okay." She goes, "Go to the desk then."
So they let you in to be with your mom, right?
Yeah, in the emergency room, right? That was early in the COVID time period, when they first started all of it. But, she hasn't had to go back to the hospital since then. But, luckily it was something minor, actually. Wasn't minor to her at the time, but, it was in the way of different things happening, it was minor. Nancy, one of the things that I had to ask you, though, was how does your book and your business help corporations now?
So, actually, that's a good question, Daniel. What's happening in our work environment, not just in COVID, but over the last few years, is that the number of people who are coming to a point in age are, you know, the baby boomers, we're getting up there. And the average age of a caregiver usually starts at around 49, so late 40s, early 50s. And I started seeing signs with my parents. I was 49 years old. And it's interesting to hear the stories of those of us that are taking care of somebody who's older. We're kind of afraid to tell our employers what's going on, and yet it's taking so much out of our energy, out of our day-to-day work. So the amount of distraction of caregiving for an elder parent is huge. Yet we are willing to talk about our children. We don't bring the conversation of elderly parents who are frail or maybe on, you know, their last days forward to the workplace. And the workplace isn't real good at adjusting to that kind of care because they don't celebrate it. We celebrate children. We don't celebrate the old.
Mm, yeah.
So the book is really designed and can help companies if they can give it to all their employees or through some other resource, buy it so they have it. It takes, like I said, away, you know, some of the anxiety and pain and suffering from the employee to say, okay, I got this. I know what to do. I can still keep, you know, 1 foot in the door at the job or at the Zoom counter, you know, desk, you know, at home now, and the other foot at the hospital if I need to, and still keep that balance as much as possible. It's not going to be easy, but it will be less stressful. And the last thing you want to do as a company is, you know, have, it's almost 40% of the workforce is dealing with this now. You can't afford to do that. It's huge. It's huge. And it's interesting to see that, you know,
I'm at the very end of the baby boomers, and I'm 62. So, you know, that is the, you know, I'm like the last of the baby boomers out there.
Yeah. I'm there with
at 62. And, you know, that is something that, you know, people aren't thinking about is the fact that, you know, I'm taking care of my mom, and my wife is having to take care of me.
Yep.
And if something happens to me, she's got to take care of my mom. You know, if say both of us have something, she's the one who's going to have to take care of my mom and me at the same time. And that will be a heavy stress on her. That's the reason your book is so important to people like me, as well as, you know, the fact of being able to have it for her.
Yeah, and a lot of people are leaving their job or entrepreneurs. I was on the phone, actually was on another podcast with a friend who's a very successful business owner, and he said it cost him $350,000 in lost wages last year taking care of his dad.
Oh, wow. Absolutely.
That's huge.
Yeah.
That's huge, right?
For your average
middle-income worker. That's tough.
And what size business does he have? Small business?
Yeah, it's a small business, absolutely. He's a media guy, and so he's doing some very interesting work. But he said the strain and the ability where he just didn't have the time to manage his client base. So now he's going to have to rebuild it at some point. His mom and dad are still alive. He's put them in a facility. But even then, it's costly and difficult, and it's a different kind of expense and strain. So, and people are not prepared for the kind of cost to get into facilities. So I also have a Facebook group called Elder Care Success, which is free for anybody to join. And we just talk about the issues in a very uplifting way because it's hard. But the more we complain about it and moan, it's not going to take the problem away, right?
No.
Definitely.
No.
And as you've been talking, I've actually been thinking too, as far as culturally, you know, there's some, I wonder if this is, you know, something that you have looked into, but I'm a long time enthusiast on the history of Japan and Japanese culture. And just to use that as an example, the cultural attitude about the elderly there is, you know, I will say it's very different. The way they respect and treat elderly people and family, especially elderly family, in Japan versus America in general. I'm not saying, you know, there aren't good folks here too, but in general. And, you know, are there lessons that, you know, that we may be able to draw, for, you know, from without, you know, in some areas like that, you know, and toward you know, just the attitude that we have, because you did bring that up, you know, the kind of way we go about things here.
You know, I would agree. There's so much that we have to learn from the older population that even if we just stop for 10 minutes to hear the stories, it's amazing. I mean, it's living history. It sounds kind of corny, but it's true. My dad was a World War II vet and was one of the junior officers who helped capture the U-505, which held the Enigma machine that decoded the German code. So the stories that he shared, just a little bit, he didn't say a whole lot, because they, you know, that population tended not to talk about the war like the next generation did.
Right.
But you know, and that submarine is up in Chicago, and it was fascinating to see and see what my dad had captured in the middle of the ocean.
Well, my dad was the same way when it came to World War II and stuff. So
didn't talk too much about it.
No, never heard him say. He said a little bit about it, but not much.
The odd thing was, my granduncle actually did share some stories with us, and he was a combat engineer in World War II, and he actually spent an entire night on the beaches of Normandy, and as if that wasn't enough, he was smack in the Battle of the Bulge. And he told us especially when like Saving Private Ryan is coming out and stuff, he told us some stories about what his experiences on the beaches were like and how it differed from the movie, you know, because he spent like an entire night where the beach was not secured. They could actually hear German people speaking German nearby and not even be able to see them, know what was going on, who was where, who was anything, and it wasn't even resolved till the next day that they even held the beach. And so it was, but the stories like that. And I also was going to mention that, last Christmas before this COVID mess hit, I sat there listening to a gentleman who's in his 90s who was talking about his, his first job as a teenager coming up and then getting, delivering papers in the 1930s and then getting his first employment at a post office in the 40s. And it's just fascinating to hear all the little stories about, you know, it made you appreciate a lot of things about what we have today in terms of, you know, just the things that he struggled, you know, with, or the pay, what he thought was good pay at the time and what they could do. It's just amazing the stories you get from the wisdom that comes only from experience. And that's and I just gave you a couple examples of things, but it's like it's endless with elderly people if you listen, and they're more than willing to talk to you. Most of them are. Yeah.
Absolutely. They really are. Key, and they're great stories. They're great stories. Yes.
Oh yeah. No, it's tremendous.
And many lessons
tremendous
learned.
Wisdom.
I mean, you learn from them all, right? I remember my dad one day said to me, you know, how did you learn to get to know all these people? And I've gotten to network and meet some very interesting people over the course of my career. And I said, Dad, I learned from you, because he was a manufacturer. He owned a small manufacturing operation where he designed eyeglass frames for the likes of Elton John and Jackie O and some others. And he was well known in the industry, small shop. And he just, one of the lead aides that worked with us, he said, your dad's tearing up. He didn't realize. But, family vacations were conventions, and customers were Uncle Saul and Aunt Sally. So that's how I grew up, and I loved every minute of it. I learned from him.
Very good.
Oh, absolutely.
Very good.
Absolutely. And
but he didn't write a book, so I taught him something new.
Oh, that's great. Daniel? You had something there?
The book that you've got out right now, where all can we find it?
So you can find it on Amazon. If you type into Amazon, it's only a book right now. I do not have it as an ebook. Right now it's just a hardcover book, and it's called How to Survive 911 Medical Emergencies. If you type that in, it will pop up as the first book. And the reason why we did it as a hardcover book first is, or a paperback book, is because there's so many checklists in there that are important to have and be able to either rip out or use or copy. And you can't do that with a Kindle edition. But we will come out with a Kindle edition soon, too.
And, Nancy, I have put your link, direct link to your book and Amazon in the chat room. I have also put a link to your Facebook group. So hopefully folks that are watching the chat room can check that out and become members and buy the book, because authors love that for sure. And this is definitely a very useful book for sure. How are you? Because I know this year has been so crazy, and I know in our world we've had everything, all of our events shut down, conventions, book fairs,
yep,
festivals, you know, everything, lots of public engagements. And I imagine that this particular book fits really well with speaking engagements and things of that sort, as well as traditional book events. But with all the live stuff kind of shut down, what are you doing right now to get the word out about this great book?
Well, I'm getting out through places like you. I'm not necessarily getting out with the medical community because they know this stuff. I want to get it out to the general population, like you and me, the people who are sort of the boots on the ground or the sneakers on the ground or maybe the fuzzy slippers on the ground, right, taking care of mom and dad. So that's important.
Right.
Just by coincidence, I didn't know this, but there's a local group who's given us, you know, an award for the Facebook group. And it just popped up, so they're going to have a virtual event on October 8th, and that will get out. And, I'm just starting to network. I've got a call with a hospital tomorrow who's interested in having it go to all their patients and their families,
mm-hmm,
as well as financial advisors, because guess what? You know, financial advisors, the transfer of wealth is strong among families, but the transfer of keeping that financial advisor from one family generation to the next is really slim. And if they show how much they care by truly, you know, putting the resources in front of them, then I think that that's important. And hopefully they do care enough to do what's right for that generation.
Very good.
Excellent.
Very
excellent.
Good. Thank me outside the box there.
Absolutely. I've got lots of other, you know, things that I'm working on, but that's sort of the top of it. And
have a LinkedIn page too, don't you, Nancy?
I do have a LinkedIn page. I don't have a LinkedIn page for the CareManity or the book just yet. I have my corporate work. That will transfer over shortly. But you can still get me on LinkedIn. It's Nancy May, and you'll see the Board Bench Companies, and you can certainly get me that way as well.
Yes, I just looked you up, as a matter of fact. I just sent my connect note here. Fantastic.
Yeah, I have a podcast
you came right up there, right up.
I'm speaking to a group of general counsels on a whole different subject next month, but I have a podcast for the boardroom, and we're going to start a podcast called Doing It Best with Elder Care Success in October. We're going to have a lot of fun with it.
Very good.
Nice.
Where are you doing that podcast at?
Well, it'll go on all the major distribution channels. The Boardroom's Best, actually, the Boardroom's Best is the board podcast, and that's on about 7 different channels from Spotify on through. But this will go on the same one. It'll be out there. The host is Acast, I use.
Okay. I didn't know whether you're using C-Suite or not, but
Not at the moment, not yet, because I'm more of a consumer audience for that, for the mm-hmm. podcast. But maybe down the road. I think you've got me get myself, my feet wet. And we've got about 7 or 8 shows that we're planning to pre-record. We start recording next week. And then mid-October, I'm planning to start releasing that one.
All right.
Very good.
Cool. We got a question from the chat room for you, Nancy.
Sure.
The question is should Nancy May have these offered through assisted living homes? That's the question mark question. And
you
hopefully
know,
that
good
makes sense.
That's a great question. I would say, and I'm a bit biased, is yes. The challenge is that the assisted living facility, the home, may not necessarily feel as comfortable with it because they're supposed to be the one making the call for 911. The key here is having had my parents in those facilities before, and I took them out for a variety of reasons. But the family is still the one responsible, ultimately, and not every facility will send a caregiver or somebody to the hospital with your mom and dad. So if you're long distance, they may still be alone in the hospital and not have anybody advocating for them. And that's the frightening part. So
My mom one that's not real, it's assisted living, but it's independent living too. And
right.
She lives in the independent living. And when she had to go to the hospital, you know, she had to call me up to come to the hospital.
Yep. My mom was like that in Florida. My mom was the one who was going in and out of the hospital all the time with falls and dementias and TIAs, which I didn't know about at the beginning. And we had a very close family friend who loved my mom. And she said, Nancy, anytime there's an issue, please call me. So I would call Jacqueline at 9 o'clock at night, 10 o'clock at night, 11 o'clock at night, 12 o'clock at night, 3 o'clock in the morning. And Jacqueline would dutifully go over and just make sure mom was okay and stay with her till we could get some more support for her. But we were very fortunate to have somebody that was not a family member that was close by. And I'm 1,500 miles away.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. My sister's in Oklahoma.
Yeah. I'm only 60 miles away from my mom, and we've done that as a choice.
Yeah.
Instead of moving, you know, like my sister lives all the way out in Oklahoma, so, you know, she is not close enough to do anything. So
yeah. My sister's in Oklahoma too.
We've decided to stay close enough where if she needed something, you know, I can be there within an hour or so, depending on traffic.
Yep. And that's still a long drive when you've got an emergency.
Especially when you don't know what it is.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a panic there. There's an adrenaline that runs through you. You can't stop it. But if you have some level of understanding of what to do when you get there, you can calm it down a little bit.
Yep. Yep.
So definitely.
Any other questions?
Rebecca?
I had a question, kind of. I was thinking, kind of touching on what you're talking about right now, that our family structure has changed so significantly, like since the Industrial Revolution, kind of. Families used to be larger, and we used to all be together. And now, you know, like you're talking about, people are living in different cities, you know, and so on. How do you think, like, I don't really know how to word it. Like, how has the kind of the urban sprawl affected how we treat our elderly as a society and on an individual level?
Good question.
Yeah, that's a really good question. You know, I think there are a couple of different ways to look at it. My parents were up in Massachusetts, up by the Cape, and chose to go to Florida, as mom and dad said, not to be a burden to my sister and I. They wanted to make sure that they were independent, and they chose to go into assisted living facility. But then there were other issues going on. I thought things would be fine until I found out that they weren't, and they went from $3,500 a month to $30,000 a month very quickly.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, and my parents were not impoverished, but, you know, they were middle-income, hardworking people. But $30,000 a month eats up a retirement savings account really
quickly.
So when I told my dad, you know, you want me to, his model was always never eat into principal, and I said, you can kiss that one goodbye, Dad. So we had a very quick heart-to-heart, and he said, can we leave now? And I said, no, 30-day notice, I have to find something. So it was in 30 days after looking about 40 different places and bringing him around to see some too. So he had some say in it. Mom didn't. You know, mom was dealing with some severe emotional, well, she was dealing with dementia. That was worse then than it is now because her care is better. And we found another place and hired caregivers on our own and took it that way into an assisted living facility or independent living. And then eventually mm-hmm. moved them out. I rented a house and then bought a house. And I have 5 caregivers working with them around the clock, not all at the same time, but I call it the job of Mom and Dad, Inc. I'll have to share a blog with you that I wrote. I actually wrote about that where I joke and say, Mom taught me to be, Mom prepared me for her death since I was 5. So, ooh, teaching me how to dial the doctor when you're a kid. And my dad always prepared me to where the emergency medical or the emergency information was, financial information and who the accountant and lawyers mm-hmm. were and what to do in case anything happened over time. But I was always taught that from a very early age.
Yeah, my mom keeps doing that to me every time I go over to the house. You know, if she's moved something, well, this is in here now, and this is this. I'm like, you know, you live in a one-bedroom apartment. I'll probably be able to find it.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, it still helps, right? It still helps to know where it is, and hopefully it's organized.
One thing that I give my mom credit for is she has a list of every medicine that she's ever been on, you know, what the effects were of the medicine, different things like that, which one she is, you know, allergic to. And she keeps that in her purse constantly with her.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know,
so that's,
she's got
that
list.
That's called
to
a
just,
file of
good.
Life.
Yeah.
There's something called a file of life. And if anybody wants one, they can go to howtosurvive911.com. And just sign up, and you'll get a free file of life from us. It's fillable, and all the instructions on how to use it. Everybody should have one. They should actually have 5 copies, one on the refrigerator in case an EMT comes in. They always look on the refrigerator, typically, because that's where you keep them. One in your wallet in case you're traveling at all times. One in a file somewhere in case you need a backup. And one in what I call a go bag that has to go with the EMTs to the emergency room so they know exactly what you're on and what you're not on. So ideally, mm-hmm. that's you need 5. And, you know, 5, the 5th one is a backup in case you lose anything.
Well, one of the things that I finally talked my mom into doing is getting off some of the medicines that she was on. Because she was on this medicine for this problem that she's not really having anymore, but she was on it for like life, according to the doctor.
Yeah.
Right.
And that medicine, because she was on that medicine, she had to take this other medicine to counteract the things that this medicine did. And she's cut her pills down on what she takes a day by like half now. But it took a lot of talking with her and a lot of talking with the doctor to get her down to where she needed to be at, so she wasn't taking, you know, like handfuls of pills, you know, 3 or 4 times a day.
Especially on an empty stomach, your best friend is your pharmacist, a good
mm-hmm.
pharmacist, and they will take the time to educate you. They love hearing questions. Anytime my dad had, he wasn't on too many pills, but at the end he was on some that were fairly expensive, and I would first call would be to check with the pharmacist, and I'd be online at the same time and say, okay, what are the interactions, what happens, what goes on, what are the signs we need to look for? And the pharmacist would spend, you know, anywhere between 20 to 30 minutes on the phone with me going over everything.
Very good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
a lot of
times
the pharmacist will answer more questions than the doctors.
Very much so, and when it comes to drug interaction and what's going on, they can do that. And when they have questions, they will call the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes, you know, doctors are busy,
yeah.
so they don't always respond, and that's really
mm-hmm.
important. And you have to be a very firm advocate for your parents because they trust the doctors.
Yep.
And I don't.
We can do a whole show about that.
Right, trust but
oh,
field adage,
yeah.
but trust but verify, as they say.
Yes, no, it's a great adage. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
well,
that's
like
how
one
I am
of the doctors
too.
Is sitting there trying to demand that I go on this medicine and everything, and it was a medicine that I had taken from another doctor before, and I knew what the side effects to me was, and I had been taking a alternative medicine. That, you know, herbs and different things like that that were doing the same thing, that I didn't have the effect of the medical. And he's like, he's sitting there looking at me, goes, "You're not going to take these." I said, "I'm not even going to fill them." Just, mm-hmm. And
that's
he's
funny.
Like, okay. And just, he still wrote me the prescriptions, but he knew that I wasn't going to go, you know, fill the prescriptions and stuff. Yeah.
That's great. There's a doctor up at the Mayo Clinic. I'm just looking up his information. He wrote a book called Why We Revolt. And I'm just getting up. And let me find the book image. Anyway, but he's created something called the Patient Revolution, and it's all designed to help patients and families really understand how the hospitals, the medical system, the pharmaceutical companies are working as a business, as opposed to, not all the time, but as opposed to really looking at the care and quality of support that they give to individuals. And that's something worth taking a look at. It's called Why We Revolt. And then there's another book called The Price We Pay, if you really want to understand how costs of drugs and care really are impacting families. Both books mm-hmm. are really worth looking at and reading.
Well, I know how it impacted me personally, because when I had my stroke, I had my restaurant and everything, and I didn't have any insurance at that time.
Yeah.
And I was in ICU for 3 days, and they got me up and walked me about 30 feet with two nurses and a walker. And the next day I was sent home out of ICU. And
wow.
it was right after they figured out that I had no insurance at all to pay for this, and my medical bills was $106,000 that, you know,
yep.
I walked out of the hospital. You know, after 3 days in ICU. And, you know, all the tests and everything that they ran on me. And I had to pay all that.
Well, you can negotiate.
Well, I found that out later.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So Why We Revolt was written by Dr. Victor Montori, and he's up at the Mayo Clinic. Very well done and well worth reading.
But
you
yeah,
can
the,
you
know,
can
those,
negotiate. Yeah. They have like
yeah.
the
yeah.
the price for those who have insurance and the price who don't have insurance. And the price
yes.
for those that don't have insurance is a lot higher.
Yeah.
I can vouch for that.
Yeah.
It's a lot. And there's always something that you... I learned a little bit about this. My daughter was in the hospital when she was a toddler. She was in ICU for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of those sink or swim situations where we were like,
sure.
Okay, well, we're going to become, experts on this now. You know.
Right.
And, yeah, we learned quite a bit.
And healthcare, the cost of healthcare should not bankrupt and destroy a family.
No.
There's no reason
no.
why that should happen. It's sad that it, but it does in many, many cases. And
mm-hmm.
And they get collection agencies out there that are just frightening.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And one thing about insurance, a lot of times.
Go ahead.
Sorry. Well, just with insurance, just putting this out into the universe, because a lot of people don't know this. If you have a claim that is denied, appeal it. Like, because sometimes they plan for that.
Yep.
Like, they mm-hmm. plan that you'll just give up and accept their verdict. But you can appeal those denials as long as you have the strength to do so, really. And after, you know, I mean, yeah, it takes a minute, and it shouldn't be that way. But a lot of people are not aware of that one little small fact. Is that you can push back on the insurance decision.
Never
yeah.
give up. And the worst thing that these companies hate is media.
Oh, yes.
Get really creative. Call your local television station. Call your state attorney
Absolutely.
General's office. Get somebody, get an advocate involved if you're really at the point of no return. Don't give up.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
yep.
like a buddy of mine, this was years ago. A guy that he knew had a terminal illness basically, that they were able to make it to where it wasn't terminal on it. But he was out of work. You know, he wasn't able to go to work for, you know, several months. And the company terminated his employment while he was on medical leave.
And he
got a big billboard, rented a billboard, and put the name of the company up there, and put the name of, you know, terminated this person's, you know, because of this, and put it like the exit that you get off of to go to their business.
That's fabulous.
You know,
I love
you know that they gave him his job back. They gave him back pay. They gave him.
Yeah, they did.
I hope he went and found a job someplace else that was better next time, though, right?
Well, he did, but it was funny because of the fact that, you know, when they saw this huge billboard sitting right there at the, you know, the exit ramp off the interstate to their, you know, where their office was and everything, they're like, okay, we've got to do something here.
We're SOL, as they say, right?
It was like 2 days. They're awesome. You know, within like 2 days, they're calling, you know, calling him up, giving him his job back, giving him all of his back pay, giving him, you know, basically anything that he wanted to get that billboard taken back down.
And he should have asked for a raise.
My buddy just left it up there for like 3 months just because.
Yeah. I love that. That's great. That's great.
They're just hoping he doesn't sue them at that point.
But
you know, it's interesting that CEOs. It's interesting to hear stories of CEOs that will not even talk about these issues, these family issues, themselves, for fear that they may be perceived as weak or unable to handle the leadership role. So even they are coming, you know, out after they leave the companies in talking in very personable ways. But typically they don't do it while they're employed. It's really fascinating to see what happens.
You know, but we were talking earlier about, you know, the bills and everything that the hospital racks up, and that's the whole reason my credit is destroyed now, is because by the time I could get everything paid, they had sent it to, you know, collection agencies, and the collection agencies reported and stuff. Which, when I was younger, you know, a medical bill did not affect your credit rating.
Right.
And now it does. You know, and mine, you know, went from like right at 800, you know, points down to, you know, 500 and something.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And
even if you can pay the bills, if you don't have the time to do it because you're infirmed and you're not able to get to them, and the bills pay, you know, rack up, it's a time to write, you know, make sure everything is paid, right? It still takes that. So,
well, I mean, how many of us have a $106,000 as a small business? You know, I had a small restaurant. You know, I didn't have that much money, you know, just sitting around in the bank or something that I could just say, oh, here you go. Thank you.
Right.
But, I think they said the average person has no more, doesn't even have $5,000 in the bank in savings, which is, you know, that's the average across the country, which is really shocking. But, you know, that's the aggregate.
A lot of them don't have
1,000. Yeah.
No, that's true. Very true. And yeah, I'm certainly, yeah, I guarantee a lot of the indie authors listening tonight definitely can vouch for that. But it's, and especially this year, I mean, it's definitely a mess.
Sell more books.
Yeah, as far as, yeah. Oh, yeah. From your lips to God's ears on that one. Yeah.
I know.
But,
well, it's like, you know, with me, after I had the stroke, I haven't been able to work, and I'm finally putting my business together now, and, you know, so that I can do it on my terms and stuff. But, you know, the thing about that is I got a message the other day from Social Security saying that, you know, even though, I haven't worked in this many years, so now I'm not eligible to go on disability. Because I've never taken disability. So, you know, I never applied for disability. So after so many years, they say, oh, you're not eligible for it now because you haven't paid in over this length of time.
Yes.
I could take retirement now, but I can't get disability now.
Wow.
Hmm.
And disability would be a greater advantage for you at this point in time if that were the case.
Yeah, if I decided that I wanted to take disability, I would have taken it back then, but I didn't consider myself disabled. I considered myself as not being able to work right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a really interesting point of discussion, Daniel. Is like we all want to be able-bodied citizens, you know, people, and to admit that we can't physically do something is very, very difficult for an individual that has a high level of self-pride.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, we have to decide what's the best for ourselves and what's our family, and move our pride into a different area as opposed to being stubborn. I'll call it right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's me. I'm stubborn,
kind of,
but you know.
Rebecca.
Yeah, I was gonna ask. I'm curious, and I hope I'm not opening Pandora's box here. But I'm
go for it.
What are your thoughts on? You know, we're talking about like the monetary impact on families, and like the long-term, you know, effects of having to be a long-term caregiver. What are your thoughts on like a societal infrastructure of support for these kinds of situations, or even going so far as like looking at, you know, I know universal health care is kind of bandied about in these kinds of conversations. I was wondering what your thoughts are on that kind of stuff.
Well, you know, I haven't done enough research on that kind of aspect of universal health care. I, you know, I look at the individual, but it is a huge problem, and you know, I would. I honestly think that if we as a society and corporations could look at the caregivers that are out there that have had to give up their jobs and now want to go back to work in a different way and try and support the knowledge that has been built up over the years to how do you apply it differently in the workforce, then we can leverage that talent. So, you know, one example was a woman I spoke to the other day who... You know, it's a little different scenario. She's taken a bit of an independent contractor role, but she's done it. She took time off to take care of her parents and her children. She's married, but she left a big job at a large financial services company on Wall Street. And she said, I haven't worked for 10 years, so for me to go back with the same resume is not possible. So what she's done is she has... connected with another individual who has a franchise, but bought into a franchise, to help families find facilities to place their mom and dad in versus, you know, one of these programs where you call and you give your phone number or your zip code and they send you 100 million people to go visit places. Now, I've done that myself. I've done it several times, and I call myself a secret shopper of assisted living facilities.
Nice,
What's going on? It's like my husband said, please don't do this. I can't get one more call at 9 o'clock at night. Don't do it anymore. But it's interesting to see how each facility is set up from a business perspective, and you as a family don't necessarily understand that. So if you've got an advocate who really knows the care that's provided in a facility, she's taken her professional experience and the time as being a caregiver both for her kids and her parents to understand what that's like and then help you, the family, do what's best, whether it be from, you know, an agency or a facility, and figure out what to do with the least amount of pain. And I thought that was a good way for her to start getting back into the workforce with less of a challenge. Now, it's still hard because she's an independent contractor and it's a one-off sale and they're facing a big uphill battle.
Yeah.
But it's just one example. Or, you know, in PR, like this guy who put the billboard up, he shouldn't be doing manufacturing or whatever. He should be a PR agent.
Right.
He should, you know, he should work for the company and say, look,
exactly.
I know how to put you in a mud puddle. Guess what? I also can figure out how to get you out. So, let's make sure you don't get in a mud puddle again, right?
Team.
Exactly. So it's just really being creative in many cases. You know, how do you do it? But it's still got to be the companies that are willing to look at things a little differently and say we're not square pegs and square holes anymore.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, in the advent of like freelance work and gig culture, you know, I've seen a lot of articles about that. You know, and I need to go back and look at LinkedIn because I think that's far more prevalent now, especially with COVID going on and everyone working from home. A lot of people are restructuring their own work mentality, and the companies are having to scramble to catch up with that in a way.
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, even thinking that if you're so good at what you do from a virtual perspective, maybe you can teach others how to do it better. People who are less flexible at knowing how to run a Zoom meeting in a way that really engages a crowd of 2,000 people. I was on a conference this past weekend, and I probably had a better engagement with that audience than I would have ever had in person.
Yeah. I mean, it
depends
different.
How they're run, and how well you connect. And some people just are not used to connecting with people that they don't know in a very virtual environment. But I find it's quite easy to do it on a broader scale and quickly weed out who to talk to and who you really will have a long-term bond with for the right reason, as opposed to chit-chat because somebody's got a certain level of bravado that or the way you like they dress, you know, that they dress well. You know, other attractors or distractors.
Right. When you go to these conferences that you've been going to, what do you speak about there?
Well, in this particular case, I was a participant. I didn't necessarily speak. I was there to learn. But in each of the breakout sessions, we talked about our challenges from a business perspective, what was going on, and quickly, you know, we now have a side group after the conference of 54 people that are saying, all right, let's move this forward. Let's keep our little tribe together and continue to be of support. So it's been great.
Very nice.
Very good.
But I do think, you were talking about out of the box and so forth, but I think that this whole one thing that it's not good that this whole COVID thing's locked everybody, you know, pretty much down, but it has gotten people open to using different mediums like live chatting, streaming, things like that. I've seen it in the author community. Everyone's less fearful of the virtual convention now than they were even 6 months ago. People are a lot more open to that, for instance. And so I think at least some of the out-of-the-box new areas that kind of have emerged are being more embraced. And that should bode well for with you getting your message out and your book.
Yeah.
I think.
I hope so. You know, and you only have to dress well from the waist up, right?
Yeah. That is the biggest hack that we've ever learned so far.
My husband will ask me in the morning.
He said, if you go out, all I have to do is do my eyes with makeup, and the rest I can just let it go bare.
Yeah, my husband will say, do you have to put Zoom face on this morning?
Yep.
And we do have a question from the chat room. Does Nancy think she can reach a broader audience online than in person to boomers specifically with their aging parents?
Absolutely. Absolutely. To me, that's a no-brainer. There's a way to do it, and we're in the process of putting some connections to doing it. Interestingly enough, I started my career in online services in the early 80s when there was Prodigy and CompuServe and GE, and I ran forums. Yeah, I ran forums on CompuServe. I was known.
Nice.
Can you remember that, right? I was
known for
a couple of marketing. Yeah. Yeah. I don't remember my ID number, but I ran a couple of forums and people knew me in different aspects around the world. So it was a more interesting group of people who were online back then, I'll say, than there are today. It's a broader audience today.
That was the Wild West period of the internet.
And I met some of them in person, which I wish I didn't meet in person too.
That's awesome.
But I was at J. Walter Thompson early on in those days, working in the advertising business. So.
One of the things. I saw today online that I thought was funny, Damon John put out a video on Hindsight's 2020, and it was about a lady that came on Shark Tank with decorative surgical mask. And all of them were like, that will never work here, blah, blah, blah. Don't think it has any... We're out. Every one of the sharks, if Japan, those areas maybe, but over here, having a piggy nose and beard and stuff like that on a surgical mask, it won't ever work.
Yeah.
2020 comes along and
if they
could have seen the future, they would have stood there and all of them would have backed that lady. At that point in time.
Mm-hmm.
I can see it with one that looks like Gene Simmons from Kiss, right?
Yes. Love it.
Amazing.
I'm a lifelong Kiss fan, so I like that. I love it.
There you go.
True story, Nancy. I saw Kiss concert was the last live music show I saw before the COVID thing hit, February 13th.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
That's just an anecdote. But I'm sorry to interrupt, but I had to tell you that.
Steve is a lifetime Kisser.
They are amazing business professionals. Have you followed their story
from a business perspective?
I
have.
They are brilliant, and for that, I have huge respect. I have huge respect.
Yeah,
yes.
Gene and Paul, they have laser-like minds, both of them. Yeah,
brilliant.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Boy, that's a guy I'd like to talk to.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's my childhood, too. So, yeah, that's it'd be something else. Oh, man.
Well, Mark.
But,
Nancy, Mark, and them could probably sit there and introduce you to them.
Well, hey, I'm ready. Tell me when. I'll be there. I'll mask. I'll make a mask to look like it. How's that?
That's awesome.
I don't know exactly how you get in touch with him and everything, but he was on Scotch and Sundays.
Yeah.
With us Sunday night, and
he was
a drummer for Pink and everything.
Yes.
Yeah, that guy.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one that's on there all the time too. That they both live out in the West Coast area, but yeah, they
terrific
musicians and everything. That could probably be your connection.
And I like Pink. Yeah, I'll have to ask. It said so. How many times? And Gene Simmons doesn't drink, so I can't sing Belly Up to the Bar, right? So.
Right.
Yeah.
Belly
That's
up to the
true.
Tennis
That's...
court. I don't know. What does he do?
Yeah.
I'm going to find out his vice.
Oh, that's good. So, that is so good.
A great idea coming out of the chat room right now. Clayton
What's
said
that?
He had to go somewhere with a mandated mask, and so he silkscreened one of his book covers onto his mask. I was like, that's brilliant.
That's
we're walking
brilliant.
Around with a billboard right on our face. I mean, that's a really good idea.
Yep.
I'll put 911 on my face.
There you go.
With a stethoscope around my neck.
Yep. RGWesterman.com right there.
Yeah, no
I survived
kidding.
911.
Yep.
Yeah. Think out of the box.
Awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
That could be fun. Yeah. Yeah. I love it. Thank you, whoever wrote that.
As Clayton. Yep. Clayton has been the source of the questions tonight here. He's the brave one. We have about 5.5 minutes coming up on the show here, so I wanted to give you time to tell our audience the best ways to connect with you. We have put some links in the chat room, obviously, but we want you to say it on the air. Connect with you on social media, websites, or anything you want to tell folks.
Sure. Sure. Well, I would certainly say if they want some additional information and want to stay connected with me, we built a landing page for the book, just to start with, which is called howtosurvive911.com. You can get a free file of life. It gives you all the instructions. It's fillable, so you don't have to just print it out and scratch it out when you make mistakes. It's there for you, free of charge. On the Facebook group, it's called Elder Care Success. And on... I'm on Twitter. I just put a Twitter account for CareManity, CareManity. It's at CareManity. And on LinkedIn, you can get me at Nancy May, and it's the Boy Bench Companies. And that will change, but I'm not changing, uh-huh. So I'm not going anywhere soon. At least I'm not planning to.
Yes,
unless
that's
I have
great
to
thing
dial 911 for myself.
Well, hopefully, not that. Yeah, we want you to have some great stuff ahead, especially with hopefully this book will lead to more titles from you in the book world. Yeah, because we know it's always
good. I'm going
good
for 120. I'm going to beat Dad's number.
120 books. I was like, that's pretty good.
No, 120 years. He wanted to get to 120, so I'm going. He got to 99 and 47 days. I'm going
nice.
For the 120.
Nice. Oh, it's fantastic. Fantastic.
Yeah.
All right. Nope. So is there anything that we have not covered with you that tonight so far that you were wanting to get out as far as the information?
We've covered a lot. But, you know, I think one of the things that everybody should know, beyond the basics of calling 911, if in fact there is a major storm, which we are still in storm season, hurricanes and there's tornadoes and our whole climate is changing, if for some reason your local 911 system goes down, please know that depending upon where you are, and you can check this online, you can actually do something called text to 911. So you can, on your phone, just text 911, and you should get a response from a regional center that can help you. So the very least, if you know that you can do that, please keep that. That's such critical information. And then everybody should have a file of life. I don't care how old you are. As far as I'm concerned, if you're 5 years mm-hmm. old, your parents should have one for you. And if you're 105 years old, you should have one for sure. But those are that's the key piece of information that will help an EMT or paramedic or an ER doctor know the basics of what your medical condition is and where you have reactions so they don't accidentally kill you.
Yeah, that is one
thing.
They gave my mom a medicine that was different than it. It was a similar medicine to one of them that she had on her sheet. But it wasn't under the same name.
Yep.
And they gave it to her, and she was having hallucinations, and she thought everybody was coming in there to kill her. And
yep.
She's laying there in bed screaming, you know, seeing demons, you know, type things of the doctors and stuff. And it, you know, I had to get in there and actually calm her down. Because she could recognize my voice a little bit, and I could calm her down, but the nurses and doctors could not do anything with her because they had given her the wrong medicine.
And they'll write it off as Parkinson or Alzheimer's or something else, and they may not even know that it's a medical a medication interaction. But you did, mm-hmm. and that's great. And it's not that they intended to do it. It was, you know,
right.
a mistake, and an honest mistake, I'm sure. But
yeah.
That one little piece of paper, 8.5 by 11, front and back with all the details on it, you know, howtosurvive911.com, you can get it there.
Yep.
Very excellent, excellent. Well, thank you so much for joining us tonight, Nancy. It's been an absolute pleasure. We've been looking forward to it since Daniel told us about you, and
thank
I
you.
Love the content, and so much. I mean, yeah, RG said it well in the chat room. I've learned so much tonight. I echo that. Just this has been content rich, and we appreciate you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. If you send me the link, I will make sure it gets out so everybody knows about you too.
We absolutely will. And so I will sign off, and then Rebecca and Daniel, you can take us out. But this is Stephen Zimmer, another great Star Chamber show every Wednesday. We explore the creative world and love our audience. Appreciate you. Thank you for joining us, and see you next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern. Rebecca and Daniel. Take us out.
Awesome. Check me out at rgwesterman.com. Have a great week. See you next time.
Thank you.
And as always, we intend to bring you the best in the writing world, in the entertainment world, and in the creative endearment of everything that we do. Hope to hear you again next week. If you have any questions, be free to send them in and everything. We will try to get them answered for you. This is Daniel Dark saying good night.